So glad to have you on a Wednesday drive. You are listening to WSJS News Talk Sports for the Triad, where at long last, we finally have the matchups for the inaugural ACC-SEC basketball challenge that's going to be played in late November. Now, as exciting as a few of these matchups will be for hoop hardcores like you and me, there really isn't anything all that captivating for casuals out there, casual basketball fans, and that's really an unfortunate thing. We'll never know how much ESPN's truly responsible for the headlines or for the matchups that are given out, and how much of it is the ACC or the SEC, but whoever is in charge made a giant mistake with Duke. This is the first ever ACC-SEC challenge, and you're going to send the Blue Devils to Arkansas? That's what you're going to do. The Blue Devils matchup was always going to be the most important because Duke is the greatest brand in college hoops right now. To put that in perspective, Kentucky, who's a blue blood, has a tremendous following. I'm quite familiar with Kentucky fans. Big Blue Nation, we know what they're about. There are a lot of them, right? Kentucky basketball's Twitter account has 850,000 followers. That's the type of following Kentucky has. And that is substantial. Duke's got 2.2 million. Duke's just on a different level in terms of how big their brand is. And Duke this year is either going to be number one or number two in the preseason poll when it comes out. So you have a huge opportunity to get this event off the ground and match Duke up with somebody that will create something that even the casual sports fan, casual basketball fan, will care about in November. And you decide to send them to Arkansas. Tennessee and Kentucky were sitting right there. It could have been a rematch if you faced the Vols of a round of 32 NCAA tournament game in Orlando. And it would have been a legit revenge game, considering Duke has four starters back that had their season end at the hands of the Volunteers. And Kentucky, you had a chance for history. No champions classic matchup between the two. So it was sitting right there for you to take advantage of. Kentucky hasn't been to Cameron since 1958. John Calipari is going to be a Hall of Fame coach. In fact, he might already be a Hall of Fame coach. Yet he's never coached at Cameron Indoor Stadium before. You could have had that opportunity. You could have had that for everyone. Instead, you got a so-so Carolina team hosting Tennessee. And Miami, who made the Final Four, but not much of a national brand, going to Rupp Arena. Arkansas, and to be clear, as a basketball fan, I'm going to devour all of this. If you're listening to my voice right now, odds are you're going to do the same. I'm talking about for the folks who don't listen to Josh Graham every day, who don't pull the sports, if people still do this, pull the sports section out of the newspaper to read that every day. I'm talking about the casual folks that might be roped into Duke facing Tennessee or Duke facing Kentucky that probably aren't going to be compelled to watch them go to Fayetteville. They're a fine opponent, but they are still losing three NBA players, two of them that were drafted, including Nick Smith Jr., the second first-rounder that the Hornets took. They're going to be able to replace that talent with some guys in the portal, Eric Musselman, dating back to his time at Nevada where he pulled the Davie County boys from NC State, Caleb and Cody, got them to go to Nevada. He's always been pretty good in the portal. They're probably going to be a top 15 team. It is the 30-year anniversary of this season of Arkansas and Nolan Richardson winning the national championship against Duke, so that is relevant to this as well, but it still feels like a massive opportunity to send Duke to Arkansas for the inaugural ACC-SEC Challenge. On Twitter, at WSJS Radio, if you want in on today's show, 336-777-1600 is the phone number if you want in that way, like Dave and Clemens does. Dave, what was your reaction to the ACC-SEC Challenge matchups?
What up, JG? I wanted to see Duke in Kentucky.
Yeah. You, me, your mom, your sister, everybody would be there for that matchup. Everybody's there.
Yeah, and Josh, over the last 10 years, the top two schools to put dudes into the league, into the NBA, number two is Duke.
And here's the thing. They do play. They do play each other, but they don't play each other on campus. So that could have been something cool to kick off this event, tip off this event, to have Calipari there for the first time. Yes, yes.
Yeah, give me some college game day. Give me a little Kentucky, some Duke tradition. Give me all of that. I want to consume all of it.
Yeah, you and me both. There's Dave and Clemens. I think most people agree with that, too. Will Dalton, as I mentioned, the executive producer of this show. Shout out to BDOT. You and BDOT, I'm sure, had a little bit of fun yesterday.
Oh, absolutely. It was an 11 on a scale of 1 to 10.
Pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
Appreciate him filling in and having decent guests like Chris Paul join the show. Shifting things a bit, though. The third episode of the Panthers online series, The Blueprint, dropped last night, which might be a jab at Matt Rhule. He had the infamous Jay-Z quote, takes 7 years, and Jay-Z had the Blueprint album. I wouldn't hold it past the Panthers for that to be related, but the third episode was great. 45 minutes, it got into the decisions on draft day, and it got into how the Panthers traded up as well. There are three big discoveries that came from this, things that I did not know, and maybe you didn't know either. And let's start with, if the Panthers didn't take Jonathan Mingo with the number 39 pick, they would have gone offensive line. More specifically, they would have taken Syracuse tackle Matthew Bergeron. Here's some of the Blueprint episode 3 that dropped yesterday where Scott Fitterer is saying as much.
It's Mingo or Bergeron, and we're probably going to pick. So you guys know. We had three choices. Mingo was our first choice of those three, so we were really nervous while we were on the clock. Usually I don't get too nervous because we have options, but we saw that there's a little shelf in there. Mingo was there, and so it was kind of like a real relief.
Bergeron.
Was it really?
Yeah.
All right. Hey guys, we're taking Mingo. Receiver.
I'd love to know who that third player is. Odds are they were taken between picks 33 and 38. The third guy they would have taken. Tight end feels like a need. You had the Iowa tight end and Matthew Mayer from Notre Dame go early in the second round. I doubt it's Will Levis. But it would have had a strong ripple effect if Atlanta went receiver, let's say, with Mingo, so they were forced to draft Bergeron. Or if they had the choice between the two and liked Bergeron more, that likely would have meant you don't take Zavala in the fourth round. You might not trade up to go edge rusher if you feel like you have to go receiver in the draft. So the fact that it fell this way changed the draft for Carolina. If it would have gone differently, obviously it would have been a totally different draft for the Panthers. Frank Reich, speaking of the DJ Johnson move to move up, he kind of spoke it into existence. Here he was right after they turned in the card on round three, taking the Oregon rusher.
Nicole made the trade.
Walked back into my office before you leave and look at my whiteboard from that discussion that we had.
Okay.
I didn't touch anything. We had circled with DJ Johnson. And then we had written 93 over here with an arrow up that we were going to trade up to get him.
Is that right? Just when you had it? Yeah.
It was on the board.
It was on the board. And they showed a picture of it that said DJ Johnson, you'd have to move up to take him in the hypothetical that they had done. That's a guy who's probably going to get a chance to compete for a starting job since there is that hole across from Brian Burns, who the second rusher is going to be. And the last thing we learned, Scott Fitterer, apparently a pop culture maven, recommending movies to WD and proving that he was qualified to do so when David Tepper was quizzing his movie knowledge.
You're a lean, mean fighting machine.
There we go.
You know what movie that's from?
Stripes?
That's right, Stripes. You're really good at movies, actually.
Oh, I need a lot of time on my hands.
WD, have you ever seen Stripes?
Well,
it's what I thought. Scott did make a Bachelor reference, which I appreciated too. You and I together watching the first episode of The Bachelorette, the premiere. Here's how that sounded when Frank Reich referred to draft day feeling a lot like wedding day.
Scott, do you want the ring for Frank?
I said I was going to bring a rose.
A rose.
Will you accept this rose?
Hey, well, if that was the proposal, today we're walking down the aisle with our guy, right?
Just let me know when the honeymoon is so I can get out of here.
He's a cool guy. Will you accept this rose? Noted movie guy and Bachelorette fan, Scott Fitterer, Panthers GM. It's-
It's The Drive with Josh Graham, WSJS.
Pretty big NFL headline developing today, where a couple of Colts players, a kick returner called Isaiah Rogers, and I guess it's just him that is looking to be suspended, expected to receive a season-long suspension, coming down the pike. That's according to ESPN's Adam Schefter. Just the latest in terms of violations of the gambling policy. He acknowledged on social media earlier this month that he accepts full responsibility for his actions. The key rules that the NFL is emphasizing in relation to gambling.
Send me that cash out, fam.
Number one, don't bet on the NFL ever. No exceptions to that. Number two, don't gamble at the team facility on any other sport while traveling for a road game as well or staying at a team hotel. Number three, don't have someone place a bet for you. Number four, don't share team inside information with anybody. Number five, don't enter a sports book during the playing season. Don't walk into those, even though that might get a bit hairy when there are sports books inside NFL stadiums. And number six, don't play daily fantasy football. Emphasis on daily. So another NFL player looking to face a season-long suspension the same way that Calvin Ridley did. Was that last year or was that 2 years ago?
That was last year.
Last year. That's not very good.
No.
So how about we improve morale in this segment and in this studio and across the triad by playing Weekly Positivity right now? Oh, yeah. 1,100 men went into the water. 376 men came out of the water. Hi, Will.
Hi, Josh. That was from Jaws.
Yeah. Wow. You watch that for the first time, and then you're going to watch Old School.
That's right.
It's going to be a good couple of weeks, or a good couple of weeks. If you would like tickets to go see any of the three following shows, John Anderson and the Kentucky Headhunters, which is for Friday, July 21st, and there's a strong chance that Josh Graham's going to be there, Winston-Salem Fairgrounds Annex. If you'd like to see that show, or Tears for Fears, who will be in Raleigh, not this Saturday, but the Saturday following. Or you'd like to see Trippie Redd, who's going to be in either Charlotte or Raleigh, your choice of city, in September, 336-777-1600. Give us a call, and all you got to do is tell us something good. I'll get us started by telling you about a nice day that I had to myself yesterday. A lot of people, because of you and BDOT, telling people that I was sick or hungover or other nonsense that wasn't true, a lot of people checked in to see if I was doing okay or doing good, and I was. I just had what some people describe to be a staycation. Not a vacation where you leave to go somewhere, but a staycation where you remain at your home and you just relax. I watched a couple of movies yesterday. I watched Proof of Life with Russell Crowe and Meg Ryan. Willow the dog liked that one. Went on a couple walks with Willow, took her to a dog park. Might have been the same one as that Josh and Clemens fella from yesterday. And then we watched The Breakfast Club. Willow wasn't as big of a fan as that.
I don't like that.
Cooked dinner and invited WD over to watch The Bachelorette. That was my staycation. And it was super relaxing. I've been to the NSMA every year since 2015, and the day after, I never work, because I am up usually super late, and a lot of work goes into the show to broadcast from there, so I just take a day for me. A staycation. Yeah, staycation. 336-777-1600 is the phone number. Let's go to Kyle, the Amazon driver. Hi, Kyle.
Hello, Josh.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, I am. Let me try to think of a good word for it. Good.
That's good. I'm glad to hear you're feeling well. Cause
thanks.
I thought that might have been a strange call, that Josh from the dog park, but I realized his voice seemed a little bit too deep to be yours.
Yeah.
Weird dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, weird dude. Yeah. So it was either you or not you. It doesn't matter. But that guy probably wasn't 100% all there. Speaking of not being 100% all there, Josh, you remember I sprained my wrist pretty bad bowling a while back ago. You remember this?
It was a gruesome bowling injury you had. Did you have the proper equipment on when you were bowling that day?
Oh, I did not. I thought I was still 16 years old out there ripping it. But I bring that up to bring this up. Last night, I went bowling, and I've been doing this two-handed style to take some of the pressure off my wrist, just to kind of keep going with what I've been doing. And for some reason, I don't know why, naturally, last night, my second hand just came off the ball, and I started throwing one-handed again.
Whoa. Wow.
Oh, Josh, let me tell you, 11 strikes in a row later, I shot a 277.
That's more than good.
11 in a row.
That is,
wow.
That is great.
How'd you celebrate? What'd you do afterwards?
I went home and I ate Hot Pockets and drank a canned Pepsi and played video games.
That's incredible.
PGA.
Thank you, Kyle, the Amazon driver. There he goes. Wow, 276?
He's good at that.
Good at that. And I bet you it was a pepperoni Hot Pocket, too.
I wanted to find out.
Well, we got to go to Tim in Moxville. I almost said Knoxville. I didn't mean that. Hi, Tim in Moxville. Tell me something good.
Hello, Josh. And
hi. Hello. Hey.
I'm going to my cousin's July the 4th party on Tuesday, and that's good.
That is on the 4th. Yeah, the 4th is on a Tuesday.
So I'm looking forward to the party, spending time with my cousin at the pool.
What are you bringing to the party, Tim?
Probably some corn, some of the fresh corn on the cob.
Okay, I was about to say, we're not talking about like shucked corn. We're talking about on the cob. Are you going to cook that corn on the cob at all? Like, how do you prepare? Are you rubbing some butter on it? What are we doing here, Tim?
Yes, that's good.
That is good.
I'm going to boil it.
Yeah.
And we're going to put butter and salt on it, and it's going to be good.
That is, yeah. Thanks for the call, Tim. I don't know why that sounded oddly sexual. I didn't mean for it to.
Well, that's how I talk sometimes.
You want to tell me something good on the way out, WD?
I'd love to. Well, for starters, I finally met Bob Ryan for the first time, or at least got to meet him in person the other night.
Yeah.
And Ian Eagle.
Yeah.
And I got to see Randolph Childress. We had some old fashions together. But this morning, I went to the dentist. Didn't have any cavities.
But,
so that's good.
But?
Well, there is no but.
Oh, okay.
But because I went to the dentist, and it was such an early appointment, I got to go have breakfast at my parents' this morning in High Point, and I had a brown sugar cinnamon bagel from Panera, and it was delicious and good.
And that's been Weekly Positivity.
Your attention, please.
It's showtime.
This is The Drive with Josh Graham.
This is all I'm going to say to Carolina fans who on social media are objecting to the idea that Carolina is a so-so team this year for their standard. as I said earlier in the show, or might object to them being a top 15 team. What have they added specifically this offseason that makes you think they are going to be substantially better, which is what would be required in order for a team that missed the tournament last year to be a top 15 team? If you believe that answer is addition by subtraction, not having Caleb Love, I will remind you, Caleb Love led the team in scoring last year. We'll see how that scoring is replaced. Just throwing that out there. There's a chance he might have been scapegoated, and a lot of the things that are thrown at Caleb Love might not all be Caleb Love's fault. If you say Elliot Cadeau, let's not forget, he is not a normal freshman. He's a reclassified freshman. That means he's really young. Look at Tyrese Proctor last year at Duke. He was pretty good early on defensively, but a lot bigger build than Elliot Cadeau. The scoring didn't come until the final month of the season. So that's what you should expect for Cadeau in a best case scenario, that he starts to figure it out as the season goes on. You shouldn't be looking to him in year one to be a savior. That's probably a multi-year deal that you're looking at with Cadeau. Not a one-and-done guy in all likelihood. So probably not the game-changing type. If you're going to say any of the other transfers, I'll ask you this question. How many of those transfers played in the NCAA tournament last year? Cormac Ryan didn't. Jalen Withers certainly didn't at Louisville. Harrison Ingram didn't at Stanford. Paxton Wojcik didn't at Brown. None of them did. So there's a chance. Well, not even a chance. I think Carolina's entire roster missed the NCAA tournament last year. All of them missed the NCAA tournament. And the only one with a good excuse for missing the tournament is Elliot Cadeau. So spare me the, oh, well, ESPN says they're ranked 15th in their rankings. Okay, where did ESPN have them going into last year? Spare me all of that. I need to see it first. And it's fair, more than fair, to say that this is a so-so Carolina team for their standard. They're going to be better. I do buy that. I think they're an NCAA tournament team. I think they're going to win a game in a tournament. But let's stay on planet Earth when talking about expectations beyond that. Their opponent in the ACC-SEC Challenge is Tennessee. Coming to the Smith Center. And for the locals, WD, Carolina-Tennessee, that is the one silver lining that we have with the ACC-SEC Challenge. The other three matchups that we got, pretty underwhelming. Wake and Florida. What ties are there between Wake and Florida? Ty Appleby Bowl, I guess. Even though Ty Appleby is no longer at Wake Forest.
Yeah, they're a year late on that one.
We're a year too late on the Jarkel Joyner Bowl, too. NC State and Ole Miss. Year too late there. Chris Beard's back, though. Cool. Duke and Arkansas. That's fine. It's going to be a pretty big game. Okay, prime time. Yeah, baby. We're going down to Fayetteville, Pig Suey, and all that. But it could have been Kentucky. It could have been even Tennessee for Duke. It just seems a bit underwhelming. It could have been Bama. Roll Tide. North Carolina, Tennessee is going to be the marquee game of this challenge. With respect to Miami and Kentucky, which is going to be a pretty good game, but that is definitely a so-so Kentucky team. Going to tick off all the blue bloods today. Kentucky, yeah, well, you didn't get out of Greensboro this past year. You lost in a 215 to St. Peter's the year before that, and you missed the tournament the year before that. And lost a lot of guys this offseason, including Oscar Tshiebwe, who did not get drafted. Things are not great in Big Blue Nation right now. They're going to be hosting Miami, not the most traditional basketball power, but fresh off a Final Four. Basketball fans will love that, but nationally speaking, probably not going to have the greatest appeal. Tennessee, North Carolina has fan bases that are national fan bases that do care about college basketball. It's a huge building that will be chocked full of Carolina Blue fans. It's not a 9 o'clock tip in the middle of the week. It's a 7:15 tip. Tennessee fans will travel for that, too. There are a lot of Tennessee fans in the area listening to my voice right now. Rocky Top, you love! Yeah. So that'll be a massive game. And there's some history. This is the fourth time ever that Tennessee is going to visit Chapel Hill. Just the second time at the Smith Center. The other time was in 2016. This is the crazy stat with Tennessee playing in Chapel Hill. The first two times that Tennessee went to Chapel Hill to face the Tar Heels, not at Carmichael. I already said they've only been once to the Smith Center. This will be the second. 1918 playing in Bynum Gym, and then in the 40s at Woolen Gym. Those are the other two times Tennessee's ever played in Chapel Hill. And then, of course, you have the old Rick Barnes, Dean Smith angle. Rick Barnes, who was just inducted into the North Carolina Sports Hall of Fame, the Hickory native. In the 90s, he was thrown out of a game complaining about foul disparity or free throw disparity and Carolina getting preferential treatment. Then they played in the NCAA tournament, hard foul against Jerry Stackhouse. There was some yelling at players that maybe you shouldn't have yelled at because they're not on your team. And then suddenly Rick Barnes and Dean Smith are face-to-face in Greensboro. Yeah, nose-to-nose in Greensboro. That's going to be brought up quite a bit when that matchup nears. But that's the one silver lining that we have in the challenge. Shifting things. Shout out to Chris Paul. He joined the show yesterday. Even though I wasn't hosting for that conversation. Thanks for pointing that out in the interview yesterday, B-Dot.
Dang, Josh. My bad.
It's okay, Chris. We're cool. Thought this was a really good answer when talking about his excitement playing for the Warriors. This is one of the first interviews he gave since being traded to the Golden State Warriors. B-Dot conducting it, and here he was on WSJS.
Honestly, it's different.
Right.
That's a team I've been going against for the last, I don't know, 12 years. Yes. You know what I mean? Consistently. Everybody got all these questions about this and that. You know, I didn't play 18 years.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And to be frank with you, I've been playing since I was 4, so I put that around about like 34 years.
That part.
I've been playing this game a long time, man, so I like my chances of figuring this thing out.
The key in order to figure it out, Chris Paul with Staff and Company, it's going to be preservation. It bothers me when you have the 20-year-old types in the NBA talking about load management. I'm fine with it when you talk about Chris Paul is going to turn 39 next year. That's going to be the key for the Warriors. For the first time in Chris's career, he should not be playing 30 minutes a game. And this guy's played, as he said, 18 years, right? He's playing more than 30 a game. I don't think he's played less than 31 minutes a game. In the regular season, he should float around 25, if that. That's where he should be. He should never play back-to-backs. And the way they should do it, you shouldn't ever see in the first half Chris Paul on the floor at the same time as Steph Curry. That's how I feel. And then the second half, you stagger them too, until you get the crunch time. That's when you can start to put the guys together. Because if you stagger it that way, you can keep Chris fresh and probably keep Steph fresh as well, depending on how you play it. They should be able to get away with this in the West. I don't think they're a top four seed in the West, at least not in the regular season. The Nuggets, they're the champions for a reason. The Lakers, best record in the league in the second half of the year, got to the Western Conference Finals. They have some guy named LeBron James. You got Phoenix. We'll put him there. I really like Sacramento, top three seed last year, and they're pointing up. I put Golden State in that group with Dallas, who's going to bounce back. I put them in that group with Memphis, with Ja Morant being suspended the first 25 games. They're going to float around the middle of the West. The Clippers, maybe OKC. You got to finish better than a couple of them to be in the 5 or the 6 spot. Stay out of the play-in. I think they should be able to do that. But the expectations are the same for Golden State as they are Chris. The definition of success is the same. Title or nothing. Because that's the only thing Chris hasn't done yet. And for Golden State, they've won so many that anything less feels uncomfortable to celebrate. But that's the key, preservation for Chris Paul. What's been the song of the summer for 2023? That's among the topics we'll get to when we play Skips or Plays with our friend Hayes Permar next on The Drive.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham, WSJS.
Thank you.
Permar had my brain working today when he asked me, and asked his followers as well, what the song of the summer was today. Because when you go through the songs of the summer year after year after year, there generally is a way that you can measure this when you see Billboard charts, what the number one song was, even 55, 60 years ago. Like, we're giving away tickets for Tears for Fears. There was a time where Shout was the song of the 80s and the mid-80s, probably 85 or 86, that would qualify. We still have tickets to that. WD, you have that drop of me singing John Anderson. We don't have any more John Anderson tickets to give away. And we were swinging, right? But the next time you hear that, that'll be your cue to call in for some tickets that we do have. Tears for Fears, Trippie Redd. We have tickets to those that we'll give away in a bit. And Hayes Permar's joined. Hayes Permar joins us now. Hi, Hayes.
Can I give Will Dalton the sounder of me singing John Anderson to the people who can win tickets?
All right, yeah, let's do that. Or actually, no. Can you give me some Tears for Fears that we could potentially use, because we're going to be giving away Tears for Fears tickets?
My favorite Tears for Fears song is a hard one to sing. Actually, a lot of their songs are hard to sing. They have a lot of range in there.
Give it your best shot.
I wanted to do a Don't Ask Her on a Straight Tequila Night.
Excellent.
But you want Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
All right. Time you hear that, that'll be your chance to win Tears for Fears tickets or Trippie Redd in just a little bit. Before we get into the Song of the Summer conversation, because it was a good question you asked on social media earlier today. I didn't really have a great answer, when usually this time of year we do have great answers to that. The ACC-SEC challenge matchups dropped today. So I'm just going to throw them at you for each of the locals, and you give me a brief reaction to it based on how that local fan base should feel. And we'll start with Wake Forest in Florida in Winston-Salem, the Gators visiting the Joel.
How should Wake Forest fans feel? Vengeful, I guess. They feel like Florida got their College World Series title, and so they want to go take it back. No, it feels like, whenever you played the Big Ten, if you were played like Minnesota or Northwestern, it kind of said something about you as a program, because that's probably what people thought of you.
Yeah.
The SEC, there's a little bit less of that. But playing Florida, getting paired against Florida is a big-time game. I don't know exactly how good Florida was last year, but they're thought of as a big-time program. So I think Wake Forest fans should not be angry. I'm not saying they should be happy. I'm just saying they should be not angry about it.
Syracuse is facing LSU. Come on. Missed opportunity. You could have had LSU Wake Forest in basketball. That would have been perfect. A missed opportunity there. NC State, Ole Miss in Oxford.
These are like kindred spirits, right? These programs look at each other and they're like, I know you. We feel like we're one and the same.
No, I disagree. I think NC State's a lot like Mississippi State and then you got Ole Miss, who's a lot like Carolina. I mean, you see the way Ole Miss grads dress?
I know, but I'm talking about it in terms of like class of the SEC. I think of like, I guess Southern Miss would be like ECU in this analogy.
That's 100% right. If you've ever been to Hattiesburg.
But here's the whole point, is because of the way the educational systems in North Carolina line up against Mississippi, you don't go like 1-1, right? UNC lines up against something that doesn't exist in Mississippi, right? Like they don't have, and then Mississippi State lines up with Ole Miss, ECU lines up with Mississippi State. And then like, I don't know, Forsyth Tech lines up with Southern Miss. I'm not sure exactly how that works. No disrespect to Forsyth Tech. I was trying to go one tier lower.
I appreciate that. Tennessee heading to the Smith Center to face North Carolina.
I think the setup here is you're trying to get me to be like North Carolina fans to be fired up to boo Rick Barnes and yell at him and tell him how much he stinks. But like, hadn't Rick Barnes been there a few times since he left Clemson?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like
he was there
twice with Texas.
He's
been there. And did he come with Tennessee too?
I don't know if he was there in 2016. I'll double check.
But yeah, it just feels like I know it's easy to tell the story.
He was there. He was there in 2016.
Yeah, so he's been there three times already. Like, it's easy to tell the stories to your grandkids about why you hate Rick Barnes, but to me, it's a lot harder to, like, actually hate North Carolina native Rick Barnes, who's had a pretty decent coaching career. Rick Barnes is one of those guys where, like, if he won one title, then his entire career, like, falls in line and looks like a much better career than it does without a title. I mean, you can say that about anybody getting a title, but who was I thinking of him? Like, Rick Carlisle. Rick Carlisle was, like, around the NBA for a long time and never thought of as great, and then he won that title with the Mavs, and all of a sudden you're like, you know, he's always been pretty good. And I feel like Rick Barnes is kind of like that. Like, if he won a title, you'd be like, you know what? He's been pretty good all the time. It's hard to win a title, and now he's got that too. Rick Barnes is a good coach.
Last one, Duke heading to Arkansas.
Duke should be – I was going to say Duke should be mad they're not playing Kentucky, but, like, it's going to be hard to get UNC or Duke against Kentucky in these ACC-SEC challenges because they play each other in the, like, Champions Classic and the –
And that's why it's a missed opportunity. Like, this year they're not playing in that challenge, and it's like, this is the first year of the event. How do you not have the superpowers play each other in Cameron since John Calipari's never coached there? It just feels like a missed opportunity.
And you know that on the sneak, I mean, there was always the, like, Coach K said he was never going to play Maryland, and then magically they just never got paired up with them, even after Maryland went to the Big Ten. And you get the sense that probably coaches and or programs, and especially coaches and or programs with more prestige, probably get to put in, like, a don't ever tell anybody, but we're not going to do this matchup. And there's a decent chance that Duke has said, we're not going to do at Rupp, and Kentucky has said, we're not going to do at Cameron. So it very well could be that never works out, and we never hear that it's an official thing, but that in reality it might not ever come to be.
Yeah, if Caleb Love went to Missouri, I guarantee you that team would have been the team that North Carolina threw in that pot. Hey, by the way, please, no, let's not do that. Okay, time to talk Song of the Summer, where WD has three songs he thinks could be the Song of the Summer this year to throw at Hayes Permar. So this is like a legitimate skips or plays with Hayes for Hayes to figure out whether or not it's a play for the summer, Song of the Summer, or if it's a skip. Here we go.
Hayes Permar is somewhat of a Renaissance man, an expert in the finer things, but he hangs his hat on music.
Loves his God, and he's no friend of Satan.
He was like 06, getting busy with his sticks, been watching Big Mike and Lil Trick and Trip.
I just need a Zion and someone he can dunk on.
Today, Hayes will decide if this music is smash or trash, glows or blows. It's time for Skips or Plays with Hayes.
I'm fascinated to see what you came up with, WD. You're not great when we're talking about things before you were born, but you are pretty good when it comes to today's pop culture. So let's see what the first song you have for Hayes Permar is.
Well, I didn't want to go
real quick before we do that. You know what else Will Dalton isn't good at?
What?
Picking restaurants. This man had the audacity
to
chime in on Twitter and tell me about how to feel about a restaurant in my city, Raleigh, North Carolina. I'm just saying, next time you come to town, young Will,
yes,
let me know, and I'll take you to, you know, 20 restaurants better than the one that you think is so good.
I knew it was a bold move, but I like it.
I'll take you to a good restaurant next time you come to Raleigh.
Yeah, that's, wow. I'm just already, my hand is shaking idea of doing that to Hayes Permar. Uh-huh. Okay, what's the first song?
So I didn't want to go too basic. I wanted to be kind of interesting here, but I do think these are some bangers. So we're going to start off with some Jonas Brothers. I think you know where we're going here. Waffle House.
Now, this isn't if you think it's the greatest song. It's do you think this is the song of the summer? I hear this song literally everywhere.
That's funny. I don't think I've heard it much, but I'm also more disconnected than ever these days. It's got a couple things going for it. Like, it name checks something that already has cultural relevance before the song, so people are like, oh, Waffle House, right? And then it sounds like it's got a little bit of a bop to it too, right? Like, the only thing that I don't like about this song, and this is what I don't like,
I can't tell what it's sampling. What is it sampling in the chorus? It's bothering me. It sounds like something that they're sampling.
I might have to hear it again. But no, overall, it's got a good beat to it. I'm going to give it a play with one disclaimer. Go ahead and give it a play.
Hey, Spermar.
Am I wrong that I've heard that melody? Ba-da-da. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. I feel like I've heard that before. I don't know from what. Someone's going to correct
me.
It
almost sounds like a TV theme song. No, the one thing is, and there's a fine line between this, right? What you always want is somebody that's just trying to write a bop, a hot tune, and then it organically becomes the song of the summer. Too often now, we have people trying to like write an upbeat melody and release it right in like April, May. Like they're trying to write the song of the summer instead of just trying to write a cool song and let it become the song of the summer. So there's part of me that wonders if Jonas Brothers are trying too hard on this one by, you know, Waffle House, it's quirky, it's catchy, the little bubblegum poppy beat they got going on there. But overall, it's a good song. Yeah. I just reserve the right to come back and find out later that they just sat down and were like, how do we make a summer song?
That does kind of sound like someone's message again. It sounds a little bit like Gloria. I can kind of hear that a little bit. What's the second song here?
We're going to change the tone a bit here. We're going to go with some Morgan Wallen, Last Night.
Last night we lit the liquor talk. I can't remember everything we said, but we said it all. You told me that you wish I was somebody.
I don't know if this will influence Permar positively or negatively. This is on the playlist.
What playlist?
My playlist.
Of what?
I do a 2023 playlist where
okay.
Put some things together, and that's on it.
I don't dislike their song, but I don't think it quite has. I don't think it has Song of Summer chops, although it sounds like it's picking up a little bit here.
No, I think that's good analysis.
I think the only way you're dancing, like, I'm not saying that you couldn't dance to this in the summer, but this sounds more like headlights of a car, trying to steal a kiss down by the riverside, you know, but not like dancing harder. I think you got to be able to dance a little bit harder for it to be a song of the summer. So I'm going to skip this.
Hated it.
And the last song to be considered for Song of the Summer is?
It's still fairly new. It's from the Barbie movie. Dance the Night, Dua Lipa.
I want to hate it,
but you can't, can you?
Doesn't mean I like it. I just don't know if I can hate it. I've never heard this before.
It's got the bop.
I mean, it's definitely a dance track. If it's going in the Barbie movie, you know it's getting airplay. It's probably going to, you know. I'm not happy about it, and this wouldn't be my all-time favorite song of the summer, but I'm going to give it a play.
Yeah.
Hey, Spermar.
Excellent stuff. So, Hey, Spermar, approving of a couple of songs, disapproving of one of them. I hope this was helpful to some out there that are putting together their summer.
Everybody wants to rule the world.
Oh, wow. 336-777-1600. The first two to call in get tickets to go see Tears for Fears in Raleigh, Hayes' town. He might know where some good restaurants are in Raleigh. 336-777-1600. The first two to call and get tickets to go see them. Hayes, thanks for the time, buddy.
Thank you, guys. Talk to you soon.